Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 538.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week I am so happy to be speaking with Vanessa Baer. Vanessa Baer is a UKCP registered integrative psychotherapist who works with children and adults. Vanessa also works as a mountain leader, yoga teacher, and willow basket maker. She created the Wild and Wellbeing card deck and co-authored with Babette Rothschild the 8 Keys to Safe Trauma Recovery workbook, and the new Help for the Helper workbook, which is what we're talking about today. Vanessa lives in the beautiful Lake District National Park in the UK, and we had a beautiful and very resonant conversation, in my opinion, about care for the self as a helper. It's a topic that is not new to Therapy Chat, but it never gets old at the same time. It's a constant area of attention for us as helping professionals, healers, those in the healing arts. You may not call yourself a healer, but if you are a caregiver, if you steward the land, if you are an animal rights activist, if you are a parent or have a family member who you take care of or give care to, if you are a therapist or a medical professional or a yoga instructor or an acupuncturist or an occupational therapist or a professor or other types of professionals who take care, type of caregiver who often we don't speak about as veterinarians, and they carry so much stress from their jobs. We all carry so much as we care for others. And if we don't give the same care and attention to ourselves, it really takes a harmful toll. So that's what we're talking about today, but we're not talking about it in a negative way. We're talking about the things that we can do. We're talking about safety and self-awareness and the impact of social media, the importance of community, the signs of compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma and how they impact us, the significance of relational safety and attunement when doing our work and in our own relationship to self and others, how our personal histories come into our work and make it extra heavy, how to support our own self-care during crisis moments, and this moment that we're living through. If you're alive right now, wherever you are, there's probably some kind of political stress, climate stress, other violence, war, fear of war, aftermath of war, natural disasters. These things are happening at all times in all places, but not always in so many places at the same time as it feels now, which can make it seem so inescapable, and yet we can return to ourselves, which is what we're talking about in this conversation. I also want to name that we spoke about the importance of the role of women in the trauma movement, because the voices that seem to get the most attention from the media tend to be the male leaders, but there are so many women leaders in the trauma movement who have not, in my opinion, been given the attention and respect they deserve. And one of those is Babette Rothschild, as I talked about, we both talked about in this conversation. Babette is one of those women leaders in our field of trauma who makes massive contributions, but isn't in the public spotlight a lot. So we talked about what she's doing, and she couldn't be with us on the interview because she was busy doing some important work, supporting other helpers. So this is what it's all about, supporting each other on micro and macro levels, and supporting ourselves and supporting one another to support ourselves, if that makes sense. We're all woven together. It's like a braid. I'm thinking of that title, Braiding Sweetgrass, that wonderful book from Robin Wall Kimmerer. As I'm recording this, it is the 11th birthday of Therapy Chat. I know I've been talking a lot about Trauma Therapist Network's 5th birthday this month, but Therapy Chat's 11th birthday is nothing to sneeze at. Therapy Chat is reaching so many people, and Trauma Therapist Network is helping Therapy Chat reach more people, and Therapy Chat is helping Trauma Therapist Network reach more people. So once again, mutual support, though they're both my companies, you know, they're working together and separately to create a world that is more trauma responsive. And I don't consider myself alone in that effort, but I'm very proud of the segment of that effort that my work has been able to contribute to. And I say that humbly, but proudly, because I think it's really important to acknowledge that what we do does have an impact, whether it's a positive or a negative impact. We are impacting our world and the people around us. So I didn't think that I had anything to contribute in life because of my own trauma. And without even being all that conscious of what I was trying to do, I created something that's impacted hundreds of thousands of people. I would never have believed that was possible, and it doesn't even seem real when I say it, but numbers don't lie. So thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you to every guest who's ever been on Therapy Chat. Thank you to every Trauma Therapist Network member. Thank you to everyone who uses the Trauma Therapist Network directory or the other resources on the website to support trauma survivors. Thank you to all the trauma survivors who have learned about themselves by listening to Therapy Chat and found more responsive therapy choices through that process. That was really one of the things that was super important to me in creating Trauma Therapist Network. But another thing is supporting trauma therapists. So we are all doing it together. Now let's get into my conversation with Vanessa Bear, and I hope it will land softly where you need it to today, and that it's something you can come back to. And be sure to check out the Help for the Helper workbook. It is a beautiful offering to the world. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan. And today I'm so happy to be speaking with Vanessa Bear. Vanessa, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's lovely to be here with you.
It's lovely for me too. I'm really grateful to be talking to you and to be talking about the new book that you have coming out with your co-author, Babette Rothschild, Help for the Helper workbook. Personalize your toolkit to prevent compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma. I'm really excited to get into talking about this wonderful book, but before we do, can we start off with you just telling a little bit about who you are and what you do for our listeners?
Yeah. So I'm a psychotherapist. I work with adults, children, and adolescents. I'm a certified somatic trauma therapist, which is the training course that Babette Rothschild runs. I'm also trained in yoga therapy and eco-psychotherapy, and I integrate nature connection and embodied practices into my clinical work. And I also weave into my week, my working week, being a mountain walking guide, a basket maker, and a yoga teacher. Before I was a therapist, I used to run a community bike project and community centre, and I worked as a youth and community worker. I also worked for a charity that encouraged people or enabled people to use sustainable transport. And I also worked as a primary school teacher. As well as this workbook that me and Babette have just written, the Help for the Helper workbook, I've also made the Wild and Wellbeing card deck, which includes practices to develop a deeper connection with nature. And I'm also the co-author with Babette again of the 8 Keys to Safe Trauma Recovery workbook. So this one is the second workbook that we've done together.
It's beautiful. And as we were discussing before we started recording, I really value and appreciate Babette's contribution to the field of somatic trauma therapy and her very important book, The Body Remembers, from 2000?
Yeah, that's right. 25 years last year. So we celebrated the quarter of a century. Lots of us who are assistants on her training course, we all made videos about what the book had meant to us in our practice, and we sent them all as a surprise to Babette, and she was made up with that. So that was good.
I really want the listeners to hear that this book has been out for 25 years, The Body Remembers, and many may not be aware of it, but it was definitely deeply impactful for me when I was starting in my work with survivors of sexual trauma, which started in 2002, to really understand how the body holds a narrative about an experience which might conflict with our dominant narratives about those experiences and the ways that people might be expected to share what they went through. Speaking of dominant narratives, you know, in Western culture, it's so often male voices that are really elevated as the experts. And I think the way that female identifying professionals in our field tend to speak about our work isn't always heard as loudly for many reasons, not because we're not talking about it. So I want to amplify what Babette has done in the past and is doing now, and what you two are doing together, and the importance of that safe trauma recovery concept. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple of the key things that makes kind of Babette's work different is that she writes about quite complex concepts and ideas within psychotherapy and within kind of neuroscience, but in a really clear, easy to understand, common sense kind of a way, at least to me anyway. It makes things that are really complicated very simple and easy to understand and easy to
straightforward.
Yeah, and then easy to apply as well, because she also wrote the Body Remembers casebook and gives loads of different examples of how then she puts some of that theory into practice so that it feels possible, right? And it feels like it's easy to integrate into our work rather than it just feeling like theoretical concepts. It feels like it can be directly applied, which is also great and doesn't always happen, I think, in books. So I love that.
Yeah.
And then another really key concept of hers, like you say, is around making trauma therapy safe. So making sure that people are able to feel present and grounded and feel safe and stable. And that being the number one importance, that the client is able to feel safe and to feel stable. One of the things that she says somewhere in one of her books is that trauma therapy shouldn't be traumatizing. And I just think, yeah, like obviously that
seems
that's the
obvious,
kind of common
but...
sense that you just think, well, yeah, of course. And yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, her work is fantastic. And she also runs the somatic trauma therapy training, and all of that is underpinned in all of her training and all of her work. This kind of what feels like common sense, but isn't always so common.
And I feel, I don't know how you see this, but I feel that there's kind of a direction in therapy and in coaching of taking practices and separating them from the context and just like doing the practices, where it overlooks or ignores the need for safety, as if it's okay to just, you know, well, as soon as you meet someone who's feeling very traumatized and potentially unsafe and mistrustful of the experience of therapy, to just begin doing techniques with them without them feeling safe and stabilized I feel it's being touted in our culture, in Western culture, to do things that way. And there's a whole kind of model around that, or structure around that, where that's being encouraged. But the missing piece is the relational safety in the therapeutic experience, and the, you know, safety within oneself, like the client's own relationship to self as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this feels connected to me, so I'll see what you think. But for me as mm-hmm. well, there's something as well in acknowledging that there's nothing that works for everybody. You know, there's nothing that is going to make everybody feel calm or feel stable or feel grounded or whatever. There's something about how do we also individualize things, individualize practice, and be very slow and very aware, right? And mindfully aware about what's happening. Like, is this making you feel better? Are you the same? Do you feel worse? And being really aware that while something might be really good for the therapist, it might not be good for the client, and it might be good for one client and not good for another client. It might be good on one day and not on another day. And so this very kind of having this very slow, aware approach that is very highly individualized, I also think kind of fits into what you're saying as well.
I agree.
It doesn't always happen. I guess this is what you're saying. There's something about, oh, we just share these exercises or this, you know, this thing that I saw on social media, but I feel worse. And it's like, okay, so great noticing that you feel worse, you know, great awareness. And I wonder what we can do instead, or I wonder what would feel better for you.
Yes, you know, I feel like what is standing out to me in what you said is, I agree with everything you said, first of all. There is no one-size-fits-all approach. And as a therapist, am I doing this collaboratively with the client because it's what is attuned to this moment? Or am I performing something because I feel uncomfortable? Am I trying to force something to happen that the client system isn't ready for yet, or was ready for, but it's not now, you know? And there's so much about consent there and attunement again, because misattunement is one of the big barriers within therapy. When the client doesn't feel attuned with, that can be another reenactment or re-experiencing of something that had been, they couldn't have integrated before because it was too much for them.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's something really, really important about that feeling like the client is in the driver's seat, right? Because I guess probably the definition of trauma is being out of control. So there's something about what you're saying as well about how do we ensure that the client feels like they're the one in control of their healing path, whilst at the same time as also feeling contained and held, and where there might be suggestions that come of, I wonder what it would be like to experiment with this, but with a real emphasis on the client being able to notice and to gauge what feels right for them in this moment.
Yes. So something that we talked about before we started recording that I wanted to bring into this conversation is, well, first of all, the idea that being a helper, as the Help for the Helper workbook is talking about, is not only about therapists working with clients, but all types of helping roles and professional roles, as well as just personal roles that we are carrying out in our lives, volunteerism, passion projects, the ways that we caregive people in our lives, whether our children, our partners, our extended family, our parents as they age. Anyone who is a helper, has that helping identity, can be impacted by compassion fatigue and like various trauma. And, you know, as you were speaking about some of the other roles that you've had in addition to being a therapist and that you have, and I think about people who are passionate about climate change, you know, impacting, protecting the earth, helping the earth from what's going on right now. People who are passionate about nature, animals, you know, veganism, all the different ways that we can feel driven to make a difference. And yet oftentimes it feels like the mythical pushing the stone up the mountain, you know? So can you say something about how in those roles, in addition to as therapists, how compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma can come into the picture?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I think first of all, that image is really in my mind about kind of pushing this kind of boulder up the hill, right? And I think that's sometimes, how do we feel that, or how do we notice that? How do we have this self-awareness that says, oh, actually, I've tipped over to the point where if I continue in this way, I'm not going to be useful anymore, you know, let alone looking after myself and making sure that I get my needs met and making sure that I also have a fulfilled and rich life. I also might not be able to keep spinning all of these plates. And having that kind of self-awareness of that is really, really important, and is probably like the main key to avoiding compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma and burnout, right? Is having this kind of mindful self-awareness, but also, I guess we're talking about compassion fatigue, but also having this compassion for self. Like, how can I notice when it is that I just need to eat? I just need to drink. I need to hydrate. I need to rest. And I think that was something that really showed up in the pandemic and also in a lot of world crises, whereby people are helping so much and doing so much that they forget to eat and they forget to drink and they forget to rest. And so many therapists during the pandemic that I spoke to, for example, didn't take a holiday. Like, I mean, they couldn't go away on holiday, but they didn't take a break at home where they could just rest and just not work and not kind of have that in their mind, because I guess they kind of just felt like they were on a bit of a treadmill of, yeah, just wanting to support people and feeling like that. And kind of everything went out of the window. And I think that's one of the first things that I kind of think about is this self-awareness. How is it that you're going to keep pushing the boulder up the hill, having compassion for yourself and compassion for what you're doing as well? So you asked me about compassion fatigue. And for those people who are like, oh, what is that? It can be described as emotional exhaustion from prioritizing others' needs or others' well-being above your own. So I guess that's sort of what I'm talking about, really, is feeding everybody else but forgetting to feed yourself so that you just collapse. Right?
Yeah.
And then vicarious trauma, you also mentioned, which tends to be having a response or having symptoms as though an event has actually happened to you, even though it hasn't happened to you. So for a therapist, for example, that might be having like nightmares around something that maybe a client has shared with you, but it isn't something that you've experienced yourself. And I mentioned burnout, which is also, I think it's really important to notice as well. And this isn't just about helping professionals. You know, so many people in this busy, hectic life feel burnt out, which is, I guess, defined as kind of physical and emotional exhaustion, usually caused by stress. And I think that
makes it sound very neat and tidy when we say it like that, but it doesn't feel like that at all.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And I do think, you know, this first thing is something about, you know, we hold others in our awareness, right? And we hold others' needs in our awareness. And we kind of have this like, oh, I need to do this for this person. I need to do this for this person. I need to do this. And it's like, what would it be like to add yourself to the list? You know, even if that was just like the smallest thing that you could do is to just add yourself to kind of be fed, watered and rested to the list at the very minimum, you know, and I think there's times in world crisis and times such as the pandemic where just that doesn't always happen.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Yes. And I can remember during the pandemic, especially in the beginning, this feeling of, no, I can't stop. It wasn't even the fully formed thought, but it was just like, no, it's not possible to stop right now. I can't because everyone, I have to like take care of everyone somehow. It doesn't sound right to myself when I say that out loud, but that's sort of what the drive was that I felt, and I know so many therapists felt. And then, you know, at the time, some were calling the pandemic, you know, a time of polycrises, because it wasn't just the COVID-19 virus and its effects that were the problem. It was the other things that were coming to people's attention that they hadn't really, a lot of people had not really been aware of. All of that, it was just like this big weight coming down. And for me, I can remember a time much earlier in my career where I had kind of a burnout crisis. It was like around 2004 or five, so not very long into my time working with clients. And I remember the same feeling, my supervisor saying, I think you should take a couple days off. And I was like, oh no, she doesn't think I can do it. And I also felt like, I can't. The problem is so big. I have to help. And I feel a lot of compassion for myself, feeling such a burden of responsibility to help as if I was the only one who was doing anything, you know, and I can think about how that relates to my own attachment and trauma history, you know, and sort of like the child who felt that way, that I have to hold it all together somehow, you know, it's my, if I don't keep this whole like family together somehow, not that anyone else thought that that was my job, but I, that was my reaction to the way it was, and just how it's so isolating. It takes you away from feeling connected with the earth, with yourself, with others, that you're not alone to carry a burden, you know, that, and many of us can do so much more if we realize that there are many of us. And, you know, it's like that I'm alone and I have to save the world versus, you know, let's all do what we can. And it makes a difference what everyone is doing. And the more we come together and realize we're not alone, the better we all feel, even if we're still tackling the same problem. The problem didn't change, but it's like our relationship to it shifts when we feel less alone.
Yeah. And I feel like it can be a really lonely profession, right? In a sense, like we're always with people, but not in, we're kind of the taken care of rather than this feeling of kind of togetherness often.
Reciprocity.
Yeah. And I feel like obviously you might have supervision or there might be, you know, peers, but especially for those people in private practice, it can feel really isolating. And I think that one of the things that I organize is a therapist social every month, and we go out for a walk in the countryside and we have a meal afterwards in a cafe and we kind of come together and we don't really talk about work at all. It's more to just spend time with colleagues, people within the profession. And I just think things like that are really important. Like, how do we get this sense of belonging and this sense of community that's so essential to us as humans, right? But definitely essential for us in our work. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting what you brought up about, you know, your past and how that comes in. And I think that's something that we explore in the workbook a little bit is, I remember when I first started my training, we were kind of asked, you know, to think about what's in our own history and what clients we might work with and might not work with, or what kind of presenting issues really we might find more difficult with regards to kind of the potential for counter transference, whereby we might have a reaction to the client based on our own history. And one of the things that we mentioned in the book is about taking your own, like we used to take in clients' history, but taking our own history and noticing about our own past and what's come up for us and what's still around, and even the present, right? What's going on in your present? What's happening now and how are you feeling about things? And so that you get a good sense of where you might come close together with kind of what's going on for you, what feels like it's too close or what feels like it's too much at the moment, or it's a little sort of brings some of those memories more to mind that feel difficult to cope with in the moment, and not as something to kind of think, oh, I'm terrible, like I should be able to do this and that, just to say, oh, okay, to have that kind of compassionate hand on your shoulder that kind of says, it's okay that you can't do everything. It's okay that you're good at some things and some things are just not for you, and there'll be somebody else who they are right for. Somebody else will be able to pick that up, and kind of trusting in the community that there are things that you can do and some things that you can leave for others, and that being okay.
Yeah, that's a really compassionate perspective. And I know that so many people are like, I've been through XYZ, and so I want to help people who've been through XYZ, which is great. And it's not to say you can't work with people who've been through XYZ, because you have, but it's more, I hear in what you said, it's more like, it's okay to wait and take care of those parts of you first, so that then you can really share your healing, helping gifts from your integrated embodied place rather than from the wounded place. I want to say one of the hard things about that, when I started, in 2002, I was 31, and I started in a grassroots organization. I didn't have my master's degree then. It was a grassroots crisis intervention, counseling, sexual trauma, hospital accompaniment, hotline work. And we did like crisis counseling in the office as well. And it was more than like what coaching is now, but it wasn't therapy. It was crisis intervention focused. But we're working with people at, you know, at the moment and after when these things had just happened to them. So it was very much a lot of witnessing, very acute trauma. And I wanted to understand exactly what you said. What are my issues? What should I know about countertransference? What's my history? And I could not answer that question. I felt like my family was fine. I was loved. You know, everything was good. And I literally went to therapy. I mean, I'm kind of laughing gently at myself, but I'm sure other people can relate to this in some way. I went to therapy and I literally said, I'm here to figure out what my issues are. And the therapist was like, okay, well, what do you think could be some of your issues? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm asking you. Like, I really didn't know at all. And now the reason why it's funny is because, you know, my adverse childhood experiences study score is a 10. Like, I have all the stuff. And it wasn't like I didn't have any memory of childhood. I just didn't have any memory of those things. And so on one hand, I'm feeling super driven to do something. Like, this is my passion. I have to help trauma survivors. This feels right. And I was really unaware of my own trauma history. I did not feel like a trauma survivor. I didn't identify that way. I didn't identify as having any sexual trauma, which was not true. I did have sexual trauma that I just didn't know. It was disconnected. So I say that with compassion for my younger self who just cared so much and something was resonating with me. But for people who are in this field and they do feel really passionate about the work, but they don't know why they're so driven to do it and they don't think they have any, you know, significant history to be concerned about. How can people identify that? I mean, I eventually got there through long-term therapy, but do you have any thoughts or ideas or anything that might be in the book about how people can kind of begin to recognize that something is hitting too close to home, even if they don't really know what it's getting close to?
Yeah. And I guess maybe we don't always know as well. You know, maybe in some experiences we might not know and never know. I guess what I mean by that is we might have dissociated or it might be when we were too young to remember or whatever. I guess in the situation like you're describing or in the situation like I just mentioned, it might be simply having awareness of yourself. And noticing how you respond to clients, how you respond to the work, how you feel, keeping an eye on what exhausts you, what clients maybe, what you come away from certain clients feeling, and what happens maybe in your body, what happens in your emotions, what's happening for some people in their kind of in their mind. And I guess what I mean by that is keeping an eye on what overwhelms you. And maybe you don't necessarily need to know the why, but kind of noticing just what it is. And then so that means that you have that awareness. And it might not mean that you don't work in that area or with that client or with that presenting issue. What it might mean is that you think, okay, well, how can I bolster myself? Now I've got this information that X, Y, and Z make me feel A, B, and C, let's say, then how do I bolster myself in this work in order to do that? And it might be, well, I take on, I work with clients with X, Y, and Z less. Or it might be I time them. I better deal with that in the morning rather than before I go to bed. So I'm going to see if those clients, I can work with those in the morning. It might be I have a ritual before I work with them and after I work with them. It might be making sure that you have moments where you hold dual awareness. And by that, I mean having awareness of what's happening within your body and what's happening externally with the client at the same time, so that you can maintain awareness of yourself in the session as well as the client, so that all of your focus isn't going on the client. And then afterwards you come out of it and like, oh goodness, I feel overwhelmed. So that when you have that awareness, you're able to kind of notice, oh, I'm feeling my heart beat faster, or I notice I feel worried about something, and you're able to kind of take a moment to do whatever it is that helps you to feel calmer, whether it's having a wiggle of your toes or doing a little bit of maybe strengthening or muscle toning to help you to feel more present in the moment. But things like that, I think something around having awareness of how you feel with certain things, and then thinking about how you bolster yourself with compassion, I think.
That's beautiful. I agree. And one of the things I love about this book is it's talking about a lot of things, like things that are somatic, sensory, movement oriented, you know, all the levels of awareness. And yet there's also maybe this is kind of what you mean about the straightforward, clear way that Babette is good at organizing and explaining this information, that there's like ways to write, like, okay, client was at 9 a.m. What did I feel? What did I notice? And it's like very logical. And I feel that can be so organizing to our systems too, when we do feel overwhelmed or we get flooded, just to, you know, break it down into more, just tighter, more compartmentalized in a way.
Like the structure and decentralizing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The last thing I would love to touch on before we have to wrap up is, it's a big one, but I feel very significant and relevant right now. It just feels very present for me, right now in this time, that, you know, there's, like during the pandemic, a lot of upheaval and chaos is happening in our political systems and in kind of the world political direction. And so as we sit with clients and we are holding space for them, we're also living in the same experience. You know, the things that we see, challenges to free speech, for example, in my country right now, as I'm here talking with you on this podcast, you know, it can feel really scary. And then to hold space for people who are feeling the same way. Do you have any thoughts about how we can, as during the pandemic, kind of do our best to be with what we're experiencing and have the capacity to support others who are going through similar experiences?
I guess one of the things that's coming up for me is, from what you're saying, is I think that there's something about acknowledging the seriousness of it that I think is also probably simple and common sense, but also important. There's something about acknowledging the seriousness without minimizing of what's happening and what you feel. And I guess my hope in saying the word serious is that it's taken also seriously. There's something about, okay, I'm going to take this seriously. And I guess that might be done in different ways. So there's sort of two things that I'm going to talk about. One is this kind of how the therapist or the helper or what we're talking about that takes it seriously for them, so that they're able to really recognize how they're affected by this and what's happening for them, and to take that effect seriously so that they're able to look after themselves and get what they need in order to get what they need with that. And that might be all kinds of things. It might be allowing yourself to sit, you know, you might have 50-minute the therapy hour for yourself where you sit with yourself. You might have therapy. You might do all kinds of things that honor the seriousness of this, that offers you compassion and care. Toni Morrison, I like the Toni Morrison quote that I think is in the book that says, it's not possible to constantly hone in on the crisis. You have to have the love and you have to have the magic. That's also life. So there's something about holding the seriousness, but also holding the seriousness of the joy and the wonder of the world at the same time. And then I think when it comes to being with the client, there's something about when you've kind of held and contained and shown yourself compassion, it becomes much easier then to sit with somebody else, right? Because otherwise the compassion fatigue doesn't come in where it's like, oh, but what about me? You know, we've dealt with me, looked after me, I'm okay, I can cope here. And so there's something about then being grounded with the client and noticing what's happening for them and their experience. And I think that sometimes, even though we can be experiencing something very similar, I think it's also probably important to notice that their experience of it might be very different. And in that same way, not to kind of have an assumption that their experience of it is the same or is what we expect it to be. For example, there was a case study, I think, that I was reading about where somebody who was working with asylum seekers and refugees, and they had this assumption that they would want to talk about their experience in a war zone. And actually what they wanted to talk about was their girlfriend and how they were having all these problems with their girlfriend and all this. So there's something about also letting the client be the client within this crisis. Crises and this upheaval that we have in the world. So there's something about that, about kind of having this separation between there's what you feel about something and there's also what the client deals. And sometimes they might be the same and sometimes they might be different, and that's okay. And then I also think that within the conversation, sometimes while we want this feeling of community and belonging, especially within these sense of crises, we also, I think, sometimes in the therapy room need the person to be able to express themselves, like what's happening for them that may or may not be different. So there's something about offering this also as well as a sense of togetherness, a sense of separateness, whereby when they're talking about something, it might be some self-talk that kind of says this is their experience. This is different to my experience, or something along those lines, maybe. I guess I was also thinking about, there's all sorts of things as well, right? Like news intake and just all of these things that we feel.
Social media intake.
Yeah, where we feel like, yeah, and with social media, it's like you can be looking at a fluffy bunny and then looking at a war zone and then looking at, you know, it's just this barrage.
Someone's dancing.
Oh my goodness. And it's the stark kind of contrast that's almost, for me anyway, most dysregulating. It's like, oh goodness, all these different things. And I think that there's something really important about that. I mean, I think we speak in the book about how we take in this information as well. Like, you know, if we see something or watch a video or something, there's probably more likeliness of getting vicariously traumatized by something than reading it. So this might be something about, well, how often do I read the news? Like, I want to be informed, but I also don't want to get vicarious trauma, because that's not going to leave me present and grounded and able to help or to do something about it. So how can I make sure that I can be regulated, and like in a sense of, when I say regulated, I don't mean not angry or not sad or not all of those things, but I guess I mean able to feel those things and also feel my feet at the same time. And that might be deciding when, again, what time of day feels right to read the news, or and how I look at the news or read the news or listen to the news. Where can I feel my feet at the same time taking in this information? And I guess the same with social media. You know, with some people, with clients sometimes, I might say, because on like things like Instagram, you can just look at your friends, right? So there's just something about what would it be like to just look at your friends. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to look at the news, but it means that you're in control of when you do. And you can make that more on purpose, more intentional, rather than, oh gosh, suddenly this thing that I just feel completely overwhelmed by. And now I've got to go into a session with a client and all I can think about is this war zone image. So there's something about that too, I think.
Yes. Thank you. That was exactly what I was looking for. A lot of different ways to think about how we can help ourselves have capacity to be the helpers that we want to be without losing who we are or overriding how we're feeling in the experience of doing helping work, whether, again, paid or unpaid. Oh, so much to think about and so much valuable information in this book. So I do want to say for those who are listening that there's a large section of this book that is about self-care during shared community / world crises. And, you know, at this political time and in the future, that will be so valuable because there always are tragedies and painful things happening as we move through life at every level, you know, local and the closer to us and further from us that impact us. So, Vanessa, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today. I really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. Honestly, Laura, we've been talking about some really difficult, hard things. And at the same time, it's also really, really lovely to be here with you and to do that, right? To give it the time and space that it deserves and it needs.
Thank you. And so where can people find what you're doing, what Babette's doing, and the book? Where do you have some places to lead us to online that everyone will hear, but I'll also put this in the show notes.
Okay. So the book is, the Help for the Helper workbook is published by W.W. Norton. And I reckon if you Google W.W. Norton, the Help for the Helper workbook, you'll see where it's available. Hopefully it's also available in your local library. And if it's not, you know, you could maybe mention it because it would be great for it to be freely available to people. Vibette has the training, the somatic trauma therapy training, and you can find that at somatictraumatherapy.com. You can find me at wildandwellbeing.com. And also on my Instagram, I tend to share some think experiments. Again, always with that caveat of notice what's right for you and adapt to everything. But that's at Wild and Wellbeing.
Beautiful. And I heard you about the cards. I'm definitely going to be checking those out too. I can't wait. I know that will be something I'll want to use in my work too. So Vanessa, thank you again for spending time with me today on Therapy Chat. I think this conversation is going to be really helpful to so many people.
Good. I really hope so. Thank you so much.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.